This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Shimon Peres, former president and prime minister of Israel, who served for decades in the Israeli government under various capacities, died on September 28th. At the age of 93, Peres won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1994, together with Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin, for his role in the Oslo Accords. Newspaper obituaries and Western papers this week describe Peres' legacy with glowing language, using words like visionary, dreamer, and warrior for peace. But in fact, Palestinians see Shimon Peres' legacy as steeped in violence through his push for settlements and greater Israeli militarism. Few in the mainstream press have acknowledged his role in building up Israel's nuclear capabilities and his oversight of a brutal slaughter of civilians in Qana, South Lebanon, in 1996. My guest is Hoveida Arraf. She is a Palestinian-American human rights activist, lawyer, and co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement and the former chair of the Free Gaza Movement. Currently, she is the Palestine and Refugees Correspondent for this program. Welcome to Rising Up with Sonali, Hoveida.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So first of all, let's talk about Peres's legacy. As I mentioned, he'd held various offices, president, prime minister, interim prime minister, defense minister at one point. He's considered one of the founding fathers of Israel. As far as you have kind of remembered Shimon Peres, how do you view his legacy for Palestinians?
Well, I see him first and foremost as a war criminal and someone who has served to cover up Israel's war crimes with his kind of dovish exterior. I think he can accurately be described as kind of like an ambassador for Israel's illegal policies, putting a kind face on when in reality on the ground Palestinians were suffering as a result. As you mentioned, he's had decades decades-long political experience. He was one of the founding fathers of Israel. One of his, for his entry into politics, he was involved in the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. I mean, one of his first roles overseas, he was sent by David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, to procure arms for Israel, and these arms were later used in the ethnic cleansing of Israel, the destruction and depopulation of over 500 Palestinian villages, and the expulsion of 750,000 Palestinians from their homes, none of whom were ever able to return. That was his introduction into politics, and it didn't get much better. He was involved in all of Israel's wars, of course, in various capacities. You mentioned the horrific strike on Qana in Lebanon in 1996. This was a chance, actually, for him to, you know, it was after the signing of the Oslo Peace Accords, in which he was hailed as, you know, a man of peace. And only a few years later, shortly after his partner, Yitzhak Rabin, was assassinated, you know, he could have used this period of national mourning over the killing of Yitzhak Rabin to kind of make a bigger push for peace. And instead, what did he do? He launched Operation Grapes of Wrath on southern Lebanon. Deliberately, also, it has been stated and shown that it was most likely deliberately ordering a strike on a UN compound, which was housing 800 Lebanese civilians who had taken shelter there to escape Israel's bombing, and in that bombing, killing over 100 civilians. A UN investigation found that most likely this was no mistake, and video later surfaced showing that Israel had been surveilling the area. So it most likely deliberately struck a UN compound, which really set the stage for Israel later in its other assaults, specifically on Gaza, attacking UN facilities, also deliberately targeting civilians that are taking refuge there. He has been a part of you know, this campaign of over and over again slaughtering civilians. And what has been really disappointing about the mainstream media coverage is they have not looked into any of that. They have not looked into covering or even talking to some of the victims of Shimon Peres's policies, and instead hailing him as a man of peace. I heard, thank goodness I didn't hear myself, but reportedly even National Public Radio, NPR, likened Peres to Nelson Mandela. I think if I would have heard that while I was driving my car, I would have caused an accident. That's like, to me, that's like likening Donald Trump to Dr. Martin Luther King. It is outrageous. And it's really dishonest reporting. And I thank you. Of course, your reporting is always great, but for showing, for trying to bring to light the real aspects of who Shimon Peres was.
Now, on the Kano massacre, this happened in 1996, not that long ago. And Ben White, writing for the Middle East Monitor, said Israeli gunners told Israeli television they had no regrets over the massacre, as the dead were, quote, just a bunch of Arabs. Shimon Peres said his conscience was clean. Everything was done according to clear logic and in a responsible way. I am at peace, he said. Now, just a few earlier years earlier, 2 years earlier, he had won the Nobel Peace Prize with Yitzhak Rabin, with Yasser Arafat, for signing the Oslo Accords. The Oslo Accords hailed as a step for a peace between Israel and Palestine. And of course, we know that that certainly never materialized in the years after. But how was it that he won this peace prize, and this group of three people won this peace prize for the Oslo Accords? Were the Oslo Accords, even on paper, ever really fair to Palestinians?
No, they were not. And a number of people had pointed that out at the time, but they were silenced, as, you know, because the whole world tried to hail this as a new era in the Middle East, in Middle East politics, and, you know, turning a leaf, Middle East peace, etc. When, you know, on paper, some of the most crucial issues were not even addressed, which allowed Israel, which is, of course, the stronger power in this, in the negotiations, if you can call them that they were, to continue to carry out its policies. And when the Palestinians would kind of complain that, well, this is antithetical to peace, this kind of goes against our agreement here, they could never really hold Israel accountable. And so while, you know, the Oslo Peace Accords were supposed to lead to an independent Palestinian state and a dismantling of the settlement that Shimon Peres had such a big role in building up, they never really did. And in fact, they gave Israel cover to continue to expand their settlements, which they're continuing to do to this day. On paper and in practical terms, in its implementation, the Oslo Accords were disastrous for Palestine. What it really did, truthfully, Sonali, is the Oslo Accords allowed Israel to cement the occupation. It made the occupation cheaper for Israel, because suddenly you have the creation of the Palestinian Authority, and the Palestinian Authority, as we see, kind of is a subcontractor for Israel. They maintain now Israel's security, and they are now responsible for Palestinian lives in a lot of areas, and some of the things that traditionally an occupying power needs to be responsible for, education, infrastructure, and these kinds of things, and had the international community also throwing money at Israel into this peace process to also fund some of the things that the occupying power needs to be accountable for. And so therefore, you know, you have this situation where the occupation just got much easier for Israel, a lot less cheaper for Israel, and it created this entity, the Palestinian Authority, that Israel could conveniently blame for anything and vilify. And when, if anything would go wrong, it's the Palestinian Authority's fault. And meanwhile, Israel can continue to build its settlements, expand its hold on Palestinian territory, on Palestinian resources, and never anywhere in there a talk about it or any kind of path to lead to independence for Palestinians.
Now, Huwaida, would Yasser Arafat and even today Mahmoud Abbas have been better off not dealing with Israeli leaders like Shimon Peres? Abbas has announced that he will be attending Peres's funeral.
It's actually really shameful that what did supposedly the Palestinian president have to do is ask permission from the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to take a Palestinian delegation into Jerusalem, which supposedly Palestinians want, we want for the capital of our future state, but we have to ask permission from our occupiers to be able to go there. And he asked for permission and just received it. I saw just a little while ago that he just received permission to take a Palestinian delegation of, you know, of political figures to attend this funeral, to attend the funeral of a man who was responsible for the death of, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinian and Lebanese civilians. And what Abbas is doing does not represent the sentiments of the Palestinian people. And it really is shameful for him to do. And it's sad for me to have to acknowledge that. But it is something also that the Palestinians have known for a long time, is that the current political leadership does not represent them or their aspirations. And that's a problem for Palestinians. But that is, we'll leave that for a discussion for another day. But as far as how they viewed, you know, how you asked, I think how the late Yasser Arafat and how Abbas Rey view Peres, you know, it's within this lens of this is the only way, by negotiating with these war criminals, is the only way that we can possibly achieve some semblance of statehood, when over and time and again, Israel has proven that it is not interested in Palestinians having an independent Palestinian state. It is interested in maintaining, as you know, its hold on Palestinian land and resources, and it will continue with that, doing that, and Palestinians will continue to ignore you through this leadership that we have in place today, to ignore every other possible avenue that Palestinians can pursue to try to achieve a just peace. And the playing field are not level, and our Abbas and the people around him should stop pretending that they are, and showing respect to a man, again, who is responsible for the death of all of these Palestinians, is disrespecting the lives of those Palestinian victims and those Palestinians that he supposedly represents today.
Shimon Peres apparently once said Palestinians were, quote, self-victimizing. They victimize themselves. They are a victim of their own mistakes unnecessarily. What about this idea that he was a champion for a two-state solution? What was that based on? Did that have any basis in preserving Palestinian dignity and life?
Nothing about what Shimon Peres has done is about preserving any kind of Palestinian dignity, freedom, or life. As you mentioned, you know, in your introduction, he was heavily involved in the settlement, Israel's settlement enterprise, because after 1967, when Israel captured the West Bank and Gaza, he was put in charge of the portfolio, you know, they called it the Judea and Samaria portfolio, but responsible for the occupied territories and involved in starting really the settlement enterprise. And that has only expanded. And till his last day, never acknowledged that the settlements are an obstacle to peace. In fact, actively rejected the notion that settlements are an obstacle to peace. Well, how can you have peace and how can you champion any kind of freedom and dignity for Palestinians if you continue to take their land? And, you know, what Shimon Peres could do and why people were talking about him as this champion of peace, because he could say, he went around saying certain things, but his actions did not match up to his words. If it was about, you know, pushing the Oslo, signing the Oslo Peace Accords, okay, he did that. But the Oslo Peace Accords were really disastrous, as we explained, for Palestinians. So Israel didn't give up anything to sign the Oslo Peace Accords. In fact, Israel gained in the ways that we've outlined a little bit earlier. And then to go around and talk about his vision of peace, but on the ground supporting policies that are exactly the opposite, it's what I've said. He gave this dovish face to Israeli policies. On the ground, Palestinians have suffered the most from this, because let's take, for example, the stranglehold, the complete closure of Gaza, which some people call a blockade or a siege. Legally, it's not, because Israel is occupying Gaza and is responsible for Gaza. It is a complete closure of this territory. It is collective punishment, and international organization, the United Nations, the International Committee of the Red Cross, has said this is a violation of international law, of the Geneva Conventions, because it is collective punishment, which is prohibited. And yet, Shimon Peres has justified it in saying it's the Palestinians' fault that we have to do this to them. But again, because he's known as being wrapped up in the Oslo peace process and talking about his hope for peace, it is taken as that, oh, he really doesn't want to hurt the Palestinian people, but it's their fault. This is what he goes around saying. You know, he can talk certain things, but it's actually not the reality. And a good example of this is, I think it was earlier this year, in fact, when Shimon Peres went to South Africa to speak to the South African Jewish community, he said something along the lines of, apartheid is racism and racism is illegal in Israel. Now, this completely tries to erase from history the fact that Israel was a big supporter and an arms supplier to the apartheid regime. In fact, it was uncovered a few years ago that Shimon Peres himself offered to sell nuclear arms to the apartheid regime of South Africa in 1975. Of course, Israel denies this, but documents were uncovered showing this to be the case. And then he pretends as though racism isn't institutionalized in Israel. It's not illegal. It's institutionalized in Israel. Hmm. Israeli politicians refer to African immigrants as a cancer. There are Israeli politicians actively incite against against Palestinian citizens. Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, also considers Palestinian citizens of Israel a demographic threat. There are laws on the books, at least about 50 laws on the books, that prevent Palestinian citizens from enjoying the same rights as Jewish citizens of Israel, right of family reunification, right of you know, being able to marry who you want and having your spouse live with you, the right to own property, right with regard to what kind of profession you can pursue. And it goes on and on, 50 laws on the books that discriminate against Palestinians, non-Jewish citizens of Israel. If this isn't racism, I really don't know what is. But of course, he goes around and says it, and the world believes it, and it's really shocking.
And all of these obituaries in outlets like CNN and the New York Times, et cetera, that paint him as this visionary, as this man of peace, somebody who, you know, really set the tone for Israel's role today. All of these are really quite misleading. If that's all you saw, you might imagine that Shimon Peres is somebody that all world leaders should aspire to. Thank you so much for setting the record straight. I really appreciate all your work.
Thank you for the opportunity that you gave me to do so, Sonali. Thank you for all your great work, as always.
Thank you. Huwaida Araf is my guest. She's a Palestinian-American human rights activist, lawyer, co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement, and former chair of the Free Gaza Movement. She's our Palestine and Refugees correspondent. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com and on Twitter at twitter.com/RU with Sonali.